Dr. Nima Moraveggi is the director of Stanford University's Calming Technology Lab, where he teaches the popular Designing Calm course at Stanford Design School. Nima is an expert on how tech can help identify and treat stress in our lives, and he's put his money where his mouth is with a new product called Spire, a wearable that tracks and influences your state of mind. This is Eureka on Monocle 24. I'm Daniel Giacopelli. Each week we bring you one entrepreneur's story, the early inspirations, the struggles, and the path to success. This week, Nima tells his story.
I got into computers pretty early. I mean, I was actually really into bulletin board systems, you know. And then later MUD gaming and Dungeons and Dragons. I was big into all those things. And even programming and art. I just was just doing all types of things. And so when it came time to go to college, it was like, okay, computer science, whatever that really means. It was just kind of, it just seemed like a natural, good fit. So I studied computer science. That was a traditional course of study until my junior year. I wanted to do this study abroad type thing. And I had this idea, which was like, well, you know, some of the kids were paying exorbitant amounts of money to go abroad for a semester and come back, you know, go study Spanish and come back. And it was kind of like, maybe I can figure out another way to do this. And so I ended up, flying there on my own to Madrid and figuring out how to save a lot of money, but get the language study done. But then fall break in Madrid, when everyone kind of went home and just went and did vacations of various sorts, I went to Nairobi, went to Kenya. I really wanted to go on safari. I did the same thing. I just kind of like flew into Nairobi. And I mean, looking back, it was kind of funny. But I found like a safari tour and whatnot. And I, on that tour, I just became enamored with this idea that, you know, I just landed in this place and just made it happen. I was on a different continent and with different language, and I was just making it happen. It just was a rush. But then on the safari, we had these guides, Maasai tribesmen, and I convinced two of them to take me on a day-long hike through the Maasai Mara on my own with bow and arrow and hammer, you know, with no car, no jeep, and just walking through the Maasai Mara. I mean, and you're, you know, there's herds of zebras and giraffes and everything, and that was even more of this feeling of the layers of construction that we've created in society kind of like fall away, and you just have this very unifying feeling. And so we went to their village and slept in their hut, and I just remember the moment where I woke up in the morning and I internalized the feeling of, I think it's Tuesday, but it's just a day, and it's just a time, and it's just this place, and it's not any of those things. It's these people in this time. And that was a very life-changing moment right then. So when I came back, I kind of was like, well, I'm still in this computer science discipline, but I have a completely different perspective on my role in the world and society. And turns out that at University of Maryland, which is where I was going to school, there was a man named Dr. Ben Peterson and Evan Golub, and they were working on what's called human-computer interaction. So it was not just studying how you build computers and software, but how they interact with people. And they were actually focusing on children in part. And that was really lucky in hindsight. And so I began to just study under them and discovered this field that existed. And I was like, that's my field. And then, you know, found a master's program at Carnegie Mellon that I enrolled in that was all about human-computer interaction. And then still like in the early days, and when my graduating class happened, that was right when things were happening in Silicon Valley. At least, I mean, there's been different waves in Silicon Valley, but that was a particular wave. And so a lot of my friends were involved in a lot of the very influential things like Gmail, eBay. Then I, instead of joining them, I joined Microsoft Research in Asia, in Beijing, and decided to take this kind of research job where I was able to just design and invent things and have the freedom to do that. So that was just an amazing experience. And then coming back, I started at Stanford. So the course was created because I was studying under a man named BJ Fogg, and he was focusing on these daily health habits, things like, how much are you walking? How much are you sleeping? How much are you eating? What are you eating? And like, how can technology help you eat better, sleep better, move better, you know, lose weight, all those like daily life. And I became fascinated by that because that was a really clear way that technology was influencing our health, our the way we live. And I said, that's what I want to do. But I don't really relate so much to the sleeping problem. I don't relate so much to the underactivity problem, losing weight problem, eating problem. Like I naturally do those things well. And so I personally wasn't so interested in them. However, I was very interested in real life. And specifically, I was interested in a problem that you could loosely call your state of mind. Stress, focus, meditation, anxiety, connection, presence, love. That was my world. That was what I was kind of always trying to improve, always trying to see, uncover. And the question was, well, how do I make that a research problem, like making sure you hit 10,000 steps and losing weight? Like, how do you do that? And that became, I was like, well, that's a worthy research problem. That is a research problem that I could get behind, spend my life on. So long story short, I ended up focusing on respiration. When it comes to stress and our state of mind, there's a lot of things that happen in our bodies. Our blood pressure changes, heart rate changes, so many things. But breathing was very unique. And then I went and found all this literature and scientific literature around breathing as well. And it was like, wow, this is really interesting. There's an entire body of research here that is basically untapped. And it's being tapped in yoga. It's being tapped in meditation. But it's not. It's not being unlocked the way that technology can unlock things. I had this one experience on a bus in Laos, on a trip with my to-be wife, twisting through these mountains, heading to Luang Prabang. And on that bus, I had that moment, you know, I could say a eureka moment. And that clarity made me realize that it had to be a combination of what I was naturally good at and the need that I saw in the world and that I was passionate about, and the intersection of those two things. So that became changing the world's relationship with their breath through technology, through products, through interactive technology, I could say. The challenge is actually not explaining that it's valuable. The challenge is designing it such that it not only fits your lifestyle, but it's fun, it's engaging, it's aspirational. It's something that you want to just not treat it as like this practice and this discipline that you got to like kind of remember to do and beat yourself up if you don't do it, but rather figuring out how it is. It's like, of course you have to have that. You have to have that kind of feedback, because why wouldn't you? Because don't you honestly want to be your best at a deep level? Don't you want to be your best for your kids? Don't you want to be your best for your colleagues, for yourself? So why would you not get this kind of feedback and not make progress in this way?
Dr. Nima Moravegi there, co-founder and chief scientist at Spire and director of Stanford University's Calming Technology Lab. Make sure to tune into Eureka number 25 next Friday. And of course, tune into The Entrepreneurs every Wednesday at 1900 London time. Eureka was edited by Toby Hammond. I'm Daniel Giacopelli. We'll see you then.